So thank you all again for coming onto the Shear. I'm very excited about today's topic. It's a very interesting topic. It's one we've never discussed before about women's Megillah readings. We'll get onto that in a few minutes. So first of all, I'd like to welcome everybody, and I'd like to thank very much our sponsor. The Shearim for this year in 2021 have been sponsored very kindly and anonymously in the merit of an aliyah for the neshamas of Masasiyahu ben Israel, for Aaron ben Menachem Lev and Eliana Bas Yaakov. We are very grateful for the sponsorship, and it should be, please God, our learning should be an aliyah for their neshamas. Looking forward to Pesach. I know everybody's looking forward to Pesach. They always are. I wanted to just give people a little bit of feel for what we are, in the Yad Hashem, going to be doing over the next few weeks. Now, we have been very fortunate to have had these shirim going already for 4 or 5 years. We're on shir number 205 today, which is very exciting. Just to give you a little bit of a recap on what we've done in past years, and you can get those shirim off the OU website, and if you can't find them there, you can get them from me. But in 2016, we talked about selling chametz, and we talked about whether you can bring the Korban Pesach today. Okay, that was what we did then. In 2017, we looked at Kitniot and the Minag of Gebrochts. In 2018, we looked at celiac issues, gluten-free problems, and matzah, etc. We looked at the Kazayit, how big the Kazayit is. We looked at the issue of machine matzahs. In 2019, 2 years ago, we looked at Tanis Bechiras, the fast of the firstborn, and what that really is. We looked at Sephardi and Ashkenazi mixed marriages for Kitniot. And then we had a couple of shirim on wine at the Seder of the fifth cup of wine and the purpose of wine halakhically and hashkafically. Last year, we looked at Charoset in some detail, and we looked at the issue of Chometz after Pesach. So that's what we've done over the last few years. And if any of those sound exciting, then please go on the website and download them, or speak to me and I can send them to you. This year, there are four shiurim between next, we're doing Purim today, and there are four shiurim up until Pesach, please God. I'd like to deal with the following topics. First of all, I want to talk about Chadash. We've never talked about Chadash. What is Chadash? What's the issue with Chadash? Why are people suddenly more interested in the prohibition and the acceptance of Chadash? And if you don't know what Chadash is, then don't worry. We'll look more about on it next week, Be'ezrat Hashem. And that's a very Pesach-oriented topic. The week after, I'd like to look at the very unique issue for this year of Erev Pesach, which falls on Shabbos. We haven't had that since 2008. We're probably a bit rusty now, and there are all sorts of interesting halachic issues that come up there. Then in the next 2 weeks, I'd like to look after that, again, at topics we've never looked at before, the status of glass and kasher in glass, a very fraught topic between Ashkenazim and Sephardim and Pesach and the rest of the year. What is glass? What is the status of glass in halacha? And how do we treat it for Pesach? And then finally, I'd like to look at a very interesting minhag, which is, why are our matzahs so hard? Why can't we have nice, warm, soft, thick matzahs like the Yemenites seem to be quite happy to have? Why have our matzahs turned into the most brittle cracker-like substance you can imagine? How did that happen, and can we change it? Can we now go back to a more quote-unquote authentic Middle Eastern type pita type matzah, which might significantly change our Seder night? Let's have a look at those topics over the next few weeks. That's just by way of a preview, but today we are talking about women and Megillah reading, so let's have a look at that right now. Now, last week, we talked about Purim Meshulash and the unique issues that come out when Purim falls on a Shabbos in Yerushalayim. And today, I'd like to look at the issue of women's Megillah readings. Now, this has been a controversial issue. Around 25 years ago, when this started to become popular in America, really, for example, the Vada Rabbonim of Queens in 1997 made a very clear statement that women's Megillah readings by women, for women, are prohibited. They are not allowed. They are something which is dangerous in some way or inappropriate in some way. And in fact, YU that year had a women's Megillah reading, which was then cancelled because of the controversy, etc. And over the last 25 years, this issue has never really gone away. Many of you, I'm sure, have been to Megillah readings for women by men. It's not unusual at all for men to have an extra Megillah reading at a time where it is more convenient, a bit later in the evening or later in the morning, so that women can hear Megillah. That's very standard. But many of you may also have been to Megillah readings for women. And the question is, or for women by women. And the question is that okay or is that not okay Is that the right thing to do? Okay, this actually is a very classic halachic discussion. What is the status of women and Megillat Esther? And we are going to look at the classic sources in the Gemara. We'll see that there are four sources in the Gemara. We'll have to understand what they say. There are then three ways that they have been interpreted by the classic Rishonim, and we'll see in many ways this is really a very structured approach. Then we'll look at what the Shulchan Aruch says and which way the Shulchan Aruch goes, and then we'll look at the practical halachic implications for today. So let's start with an initial question as to why women are obligated in Megillah at all. As you know, women are generally speaking exempted from positive time-bound mitzvot. We looked at why that was just before Rosh Hashanah. We had three shirim on women and mitzvot, but let's just refresh our memories. Here, look at number one. Chol mitzvah, asei she'azman grama, says the Mishnah in Kiddushin, any positive mitzvah which is time-bound, like, for example, sitting in a sukkah, shaking a lulav, hearing a shofar, anashim chayavim, men are obligated, v'nashim peturot, and women are exempted. And we looked at the time and said, wow, there are lots of exceptions. Shabbos and Kiddush, women are obligated. Matzah, women are obligated. Korban Pesach, women are obligated. So there are almost more exceptions than there are examples that fit the rule. But in principle, women are exempted from positive time-bound mitzvahs. Now, Megillah is a positive time-bound rabbinic mitzvah. Is the same true of rabbinic mitzvahs as it is of Torah mitzvahs? And the first opinion I brought here in number two is no. Rabbeinu Tam actually says when it comes to rabbinic mitzvahs, women are obligated the same way as men in all of them. Mitzvahs aseh derabbanon, he says, shave bakol, are equal for everybody. However, that is not the approach that we normally take. And Tosfos here in number three says that women are also in principle exempted from positive time-bound rabbinic mitzvahs. He says here, lenashim paturim in mitzvahs aseh shizman grama afilu me'oisen she'ena ele midrabbanon. That's a general rule across the board. Women do not have an obligation in rabbinic mitzvahs which are time-bound. However, there are three notable exceptions. Shehari b'ner Chanukah, when it comes to Chanukah lighting, arba kosas, drinking four cups of wine at the Seder night, uba mikra Megillah, and reading the Megillah on Purim, which are also rabbinic and positive time-bound. Loi have ele midrabbana. Yes, they are only rabbinic and they are time-bound, but loi mechayve ele lifi shehein hayu be'os ha'anes. Women are obligated in these mitzvahs because women were included also in the miracle. Now we'll see, what does that mean, women were included in the miracle? We'll see that in a few minutes. The reason why the rabbis structured their mitzvahs, rabbinic mitzvahs, in the same way as Torah mitzvahs is a general principle. Number four, the Gemara says, kol the tikkun rabbanon, everything that the rabbis enacted, ke'ein doraisa tikkun. They usually modeled it after the Torah model. So just like the Torah says that women are exempted from time-bound positive mitzvahs, so too the rabbis say the same thing. But these three big exceptions, which are Chanukah, Purim, and the Arba Kosis on Pesach, which are all rabbinic and time-bound, women are obligated. The question is, why are women obligated? What exactly is the reason the women are obligated for these mitzvahs? What does it mean that women are included in the miracle? Look at number five, please. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim chayavas b'mikra Megillah, she'af heim hayu ba'oisa ha'nes. They also were in the nes. Rashi's understanding in number six is that women were included in the threat. Says Rashi, she'af ala nisim, ala nashim, gazar Haman. Even on the women, the Haman made the gezeira on the women. Lahashmid laharog la'abed minar ba'adzakin taf v'nashim. Women were clearly included in the threat, says Rashi. That's what it means, that women are part of the miracle. Tosfos disagrees. Tosfos says in number seven, she'af heim hayu ba'osah ha'nes, perush Rashbam. The Rashbam explains, she'ik ha'nes hayu al yadam. It's not that women were included in the miracle, it's that the miracle happened through women. What does that mean? B'Purim al yidei Esther, on Purim through Esther, b'Chanukah al yidei Yehudis, on Chanukah through Yehudis. I'm not getting into now who Yehudis was and whether she's really part of the Chanukah story or whether she's earlier, not for now. And b'Pesach b'schod zidkani yoseh b'oseh dorosh niglu. And the righteous women for Pesach, who brought the merit that the generation should be redeemed. And then he asks a question on that. B'kasha the loshon afheim, it doesn't sound like they were also included in the miracle. The Gemara says afheim, even the women were in the miracle. It sounds like it was the women as well, rather than primarily the women. And he says, he basically goes back to Rashi's chat, where he says that women were included in the suffix, in the question, in the threat. And therefore, there is no question that women are fully obligated in reading the Megillah, both in the nighttime and in the daytime. The question is, what is the deal in terms of women and men and their respective obligations? Let's have a look at that now. There are four places in the classic writings of Chazal where women's obligation in mitzvah is dealt with. And now we have to really focus on these and get these clear in our minds. There are four different sources. Let's have a look at them, each one after the next. Number nine, look with me, please. Amar Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Nashim Chayavos b'mikra Megillah. Look at the words carefully. Women are obligated to read the Megillah. She'af heim hayu ba'osah ha'nes, because they too were included in the miracle. Now, what does that sound like? That sounds like women have to read the Megillah, just like men have to read the Megillah. Okay? Number 10. So too, the Gemara in Erchin says, Hakol chayavim b'mikra Megillah. Everybody is obligated in reading the Megillah. Hakol kasherim likros es ha'Megillah. And everybody is suitable to read the Megillah. Everybody is empowered to read the Megillah. Now, says the Gemara, La'asuyimai, what does everybody include? La'asuyimai, Noshim, to include women. This includes women, clearly. Or could Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, and it follows what Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said in the source we saw in number 9, Da'am Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Noshim chayavis b'mikra Megillah, she'af heim hayu ba'osanes. So we have two sources now that say that women are included and obligated to read the Megillah. The Yerushalmi. Let's have a look at the Yerushalmi, number 11. Bar Kapra Amma. Bar Kapra says in the Yerushalmi, one of the Amoraim, Sarech likrois alifnei nashim. You must make sure that you read the Megillah for women, v'lifnei katanim, and for children. She'af oisam havo besofik, because they too were included in the threat. And Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, Avad, Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi did the following. Avad came, he did this. Machnis ben banoi ubnei beisei, he brought his house, his family, his children into the house. V'kari lahem kamoisayim kamayhon, and then he read in front of them. Now, what happened there? Clearly what happened there is they didn't read, but he read for them. He made sure he had a Megillah reading for his wife and for his children in the house. Now, does that mean they have to read? Well, it certainly sounds like they have to hear the Megillah. And finally, we have a source that's going to cause us some problems. The Tosefta. The Tosefta, as you probably know, is a parallel source to the Mishnah. Not all of the material that could have gone into the Mishnah did actually go into the Mishnah. The Mishnah was edited in around the year 200 by Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, and quite a lot of Tanaitic material was left out of the Mishnah. One of the first recollections of that material is in what's called the Tosefta. So it's a very ancient source. It's just after the time of the Mishnah. And it sometimes includes material, as I said, that was not in the final cut, in the final edit of the Mishnah. What does the Tosefta say here? Look at number 12. Hakol chayavim b'kriyas ha'Megillah. Everybody is obligated to read the Megillah. Okay, we're getting used to this now. And it gives a list. Kohanim, priests, Levim, Yisrael, people who are Jewish who are not Kohanim or Levim, Gerim, converts, Avadim, slaves, Abish Meshucharim, if they've been freed, Chalalim, who are children born to a Kohen, who marries a woman who is not meant to marry, Nesinim, other people who are questionably part of the Jewish people, Mamzerim. It doesn't matter who you are, you're obligated to read the Megillah. Kulam chayavim or motzim es harabim yidei chamosam. They can also read Megillah for other people. Okay, fine. It gives an interesting case how we need to focus on this. Tumtum and androgynous. Now, what's the deal with a tumtum and an androgynous? Who is a tumtum and who is an androgynous? We looked at this once when we had a shiur on transgender issues. A tumtum is somebody who is born and we're not sure whether they're male or female. We know that they're either male or female, but there's some kind of skin covering all of the relevant areas of the baby's anatomy, and we cannot identify whether they're male or female. They could be male or they could be female, but they're one or the other. An androgynous is somebody who is born, which in the modern word for this is intersex, someone who is born with androgynous organs, meaning they look as though they are both male and female. Meaning they could be male, they could be female, or they could be something else. They could be a third gender. And the Mishnah actually talks in Bikurim of the possibility that androgynous is a third gender. What's that got to do with Mikra Megillah? So Tumtum and androgynous chayavim, they are obligated. They ain't moitzin es harabim, but they can't read for other people. Fine. Yidei chavasa. androgynous moitse esmin. An androgynous can read for another androgynous. But they can't read for a regular man or a regular woman because we don't know what they are. Whatever they are, the other ones are the same. But if they're a man, then maybe, you know, they can't read. If they're a woman, maybe they can't read. They can't read for anyone other than androgynous, another androgynous. But tumtum ain't a mighty light, it's mean of a light shame. And the tumtum can't read for anybody else. I'm not getting into that now, but you'll see in a minute why that's important. And the key thing here is at the end of the Tosefta, it says, Nashim va'avadim uketanim peturim. Oh. We've never seen this before, that women and slaves and children are exempted from Megillah reading. And they cannot read for other people. Okay, what are we going to do with this? So let's just recap. What have we had? We've had four sources in the Gemara and Tosefta. One said women are obligated to read. The second one said women are obligated to read. The third one said that we read for women. The men make sure that they have a Megillah reading for women. And the fourth one clearly said that women are not obligated to read and they may not read for other people. How are we going to play off these sources against each other? How are we going to come to a resolution in Halacha as to what is the status of women reading Megillah? So there are three approaches in the Rishonim, which I've called approach number one, approach number two, and approach number three. And if we get this clear in our minds, we'll understand why there are different perspectives on women's Megillah readings by women for women. So the first approach in the Rishonim, which is many of the Rishonim, and I've given you in the footnotes here a whole list of different people who hold this. This is the Rambam's approach, Rashi, the Ritva, the Rashba, the Meiri, the Ozarua, and there are others, say the following, that women are men and men are identical, absolutely identical. They understand from those first two Gemaras, women are obligated to read Megillah, that they're exactly the same as men. Look at Rashi number 13, Lasui Nashim, Shechayavos B'mikras Megillah, women are obligated to read Megillah, U'kesheiros L'krosa, they are kosher, they are empowered to read it, L'hotzi Zecharim, and to read it for men, L'hotzi Zecharim Yidei Chavosom. Meaning, according to this approach, a woman could read Megillah for a group of men. If there are men in shul and the person who's reading Megillah is a woman, that works. According to these Rishonim, they take the view that the first couple of Gemaras are normative. The Tosefta is not normative. We don't follow that Tosefta. And the reason for this is the standard reason in Halacha. If you remember from Shofar, Rosh Hashanah, etc., Zeh HaKlal, this is the general rule. Kol she'enu mechuyiv b'davar, enu moitzei es harabi yidei chavasan. If you're not obligated in something, then you can't do it for other people. But if you are obligated, then you can. Take, for example, the case of Kiddush. We looked at Kiddush before Rosh Hashanah. Women and men are equally obligated in Kiddush, and therefore a woman can make Kiddush for a man can make Kiddush for a woman. No question. In Havdalah, there are different obligations. Men have a clear Torah obligation in Havdalah. Women have a questionably lesser obligation in Havdalah. So a woman cannot, under normal circumstances, make Havdalah for a man. So the approach here is that women and men in terms of Mikra Megillah are absolutely the same. According to this, of course, there's no question that a woman could read Megillah for another group of women. She could even read Megillah for a group of men. That is the first approach. The second approach is no. Women have a different obligation in Megillah to men. Men have an obligation to read and women have an obligation to hear. Let's have a look at this inside in the Tosfos as follows. He understands the following. On the Gemara in Erechin, when it says, La'asui enoshit, Shechayavos b'mikra Megillah, women are obligated in reading the Megillah, or k'sherim likros l'hoitiz z'charim Megillah chavosam. And he brings the first opinion, which is Rashi, Loshana Kuntras. Rashi's opinion is that women and men are identical. Women can read for men can read for women. Aval, and here's the first important wrinkle in this. Bahag, who is the Bahag? The Baal Halachas Gedolus. The Baal Halachas Gedolus is one of the main sources of Halacha in the Gaonim, probably written by Rav Shimon Kayara sometime in the 8th century. The Baal Halachas Gedolus, we call him the Bahag, says, Loi pasakach. He doesn't pask in that way. He says women have a different obligation. And he brings a proof from this Tosefta. And he quotes the Tosefta now. Hakol chayav mimikra Megillah, but nashim va'avanim ha'katani peturim mimikra Megillah. Oh, women are exempted. He takes that Tosefta as normative. Ad kan loshen ha'Tosefta, that's as far as the Tosefta goes, v'halochas gedoyles, and then the Bahag, Oisifo, he adds, ela shechayavim b'shmia. Women are obligated to hear the Megillah. L'fi shehakol hayu b'safik, because they were included in the threat, l'hashmid, l'harok, ul-abed. And therefore, this understanding says, no, women and men are not exactly the same. Women have a different obligation. Why might they have a different obligation? Because there are different aspects to the Megillah. For example, some of the Mefarshim explain that women are obligated in Pirsumei Nisa to publicize the miracle, but men are additionally obligated in other aspects, maybe Talmud Torah, maybe to remember Amalek. There's a big question as to whether women are obligated or not in remembering Amalek. Many Mefarshim say that women do not have a mitzvah to remember Amalek. They don't have to go to Shul on Parshas Zachar, although there is a strong custom to do that. So some people say, therefore, that men's obligation in reading the Megillah is a multifaceted one. Pirsumei Nisa, to publicize the miracle, to remember Amalek, to learn Torah, maybe other things as well. But women just have Pirsumei Nisa. It's a different kind of obligation. And Tosfos actually, you know, paskens this in a number of places, as does the Rosh, and they even bring the language of the Tosefta about androgynous. They say, if already an androgynous who may be a man, may be a woman, cannot read for a man, then a woman who is definitely a woman certainly cannot read for a man. And it may even be that they had a slightly different version of the Tosefta there. I brought that in the footnotes just to make that clear. So, what is the second opinion? The second opinion clearly understands that women are not able to read Megillah for men because they have an obligation to hear, but men have an obligation to read, and they each fit the different sources according to that understanding. But even according to that understanding, do women have an obligation to read for women, or can they read for women? Absolutely. There's no reason, according to this, why women might not be allowed to read for other women. The only problem is them reading for men. Okay, fine. That's the second approach. The third approach is that, in principle, women and men have the same obligation. But there are other reasons, there are external reasons, there are additional reasons why it's not appropriate for women to read Megillah for men. So let's have a look at what those reasons might be. There are three or four reasons brought down. The first one you see in Tosfos here in number 18, he says, certain things, mishum derabim, certain things in public, zila bahu milsa. And this is actually an interesting hashkafi point. It's a bit inappropriate, it's cheap, zol. Zila means from the word zol. It cheapens the matter for a woman to read the Megillah in public for a group of men. The Hari Megillah, the Noshim Chayavas boy, he says, I take the view here that women are fully obligated in Megillah. Who perish Bahag, and he understands the Bahag is saying, De'ein Noshim Moitzias is a rabbi Yideh Chavoson, the Megillah, but women cannot read in public for men. Why? Not because they have a different level of obligation. We just understood the Bahag in the second approach as saying that the reason women can't read for men is because they have different obligations. Here Tosfos is saying, no, I don't think it was that. That's what the Bahag is saying. The Bahag is saying that women can't read for men because it's not appropriate. In principle, they're the same. But there's a problem because it cheapens in some way. Either the focus is it's not sanua, there's a cheapening of the woman herself to be standing in the middle of the shul reading for a whole group of men, everybody looking at her. Or maybe it's not appropriate for the men, that the men are not able to do this mitzvah, and therefore they've chosen a woman to do the mitzvah. We'll see what that is in a minute. But there's something inappropriate about that. But it's not that they have different obligations, it's just not appropriate. The second reason is brought is Kovod HaTzibur, and this opens up a whole topic, which I'm not getting into in detail now, but let's just have a look at it. The Ritva in number 19 says, Kiven Dekai Malanki Reb Yeshua Ben Levi Dechayovis. Again, this third approach is women and men are the same. We Paskin, he says, like Reb Yeshua Ben Levi, women are obligated. Af Maitzias, and in theory, they could also read for men. But Ela She'ein Zek Kovod L'Tzibur, this is not appropriate for the community. It's not covered. It's not honorable for the community. The Hein Bichlal Ma'ara, and this is included in the idea of the Ma'ara. It's a curse on the men if they ask a woman to do it. What does that mean? It's a curse on the men if they ask a woman to do it. The Ritva is referring to a Gemara in Brochus in number 20. Look at number 20. The Emes Amru, say the rabbis here, Ben Mavarech La'avith. A child can bench. This is talking about benching. A child can bench for his father. Eved mevarech l'rabbi, and Eved can bench for their master. Isha mevareched l'bala. A woman can bench for her husband. Aval amru chachamim. But the rabbi said, Tavu mara l'adam. It is extremely inappropriate. A curse comes on a man sheishdu ubanav mevarechin lai, who is so ignorant that he's unable to bench for himself, and he asks his wife to bench for him. says the Ritva, it's not that women and men have different obligations. It's just that if the men ask a woman to read for the men, then that's basically saying that the only person that we know we have that knows how to read the Megillah is this woman in the community, which doesn't say anything bad about her, but it says a lot about them. There's no one else in the community. There are no men that know how to read properly. Oh, chaval, it's a busha. That's not appropriate. And that is the reason that is brought also for giving women aliyot. This is a whole topic which at some point I hope Be'ezrat Hashem to speak about. But look in number 21, Tana Rabbanan, Hakol Oilin Leminya Shiva. Are women allowed to be called up to the Torah? Says the Gemara, yes, in principle they are. Women can make up the seven aliyahs on Shabbos. Nafilu Kaf, Nafilu Isha. Everyone can come up, even a child, even a woman. You can call up a woman for an aliyah. Aval Amru Chachamim, but the rabbi said, Isha Loi Tikra B'Torah. A woman should not read from the Torah. Why not? Mipnei Kovod HaTzibur. Because of Kovod, it's not appropriate for the Tzibur. And there is an entire discussion here that goes on. Well, what is Kovod HaTzibur? Is it objective? Is it subjective? Does it change over time? What if women now in today's world are chief executives, they're prime ministers, it's not in any way inappropriate for the community for a woman to have an aliyah? Does that change it? What if the community says, well, we don't mind, we are mochel on our Kovod. We are quite happy to have women called up. It doesn't offend us in the slightest. Does that work? And again, I'm not getting into this now because it's a whole topic in and of itself. But one of the big topics, the big questions on women's aliyot is this question of Kovod HaTzibur. So here we're talking about Megillah. And again, this third approach is women could read for men, but they don't because. The first example was because it was inappropriate. Zol, Zilo, Milsa. This is because of Kovod HaTzibur. There is another approach which is called Isha. What is Kol Isha? Why would it be Kol Isha for a woman to read the Megillah? So you're going to tell me, well, because she's singing in public. So let's have a look at this. Not so straightforward. Have a look here in number 22. Noshim, says the Sefer Kolbo, a very important collection of Minhagim in the Rishonim. Noshim, kiven shehem chayavos. Again, this approach is learning that women and men are basically the same. Since they are obligated, since they were in the miracle, there's no reason in principle why they can't read for the men. But then he quotes, quotes from a sefer, the Orchos Chaim here, Kasser, he writes the following, that women should not read the Megillah for the men, because it's Kol Isha, and when a man listens to a woman's voice, there's something which is an erva, something which is sexually inappropriate for a man to listen to a woman's voice. That's part of Kriyas Megillah. But then he ends with a strange thing. The afal gav de maklikos ne Chanukah, and even though we say it's okay for women to light Chanukah candles, we don't say they can't do that. Umavarchas, and they can make the brachas. Lai dami, that's not the same. Why? The fisher ain't sorech shiyu shama nashim ba'is adlaka. Because the women could light on their own. The men don't have to be there. What exactly is the Kol Isha problem with women lighting Hanukkah candles? Is it that they sing the bracha? Okay, so let them not sing the bracha, let them say the bracha. Why is it a Kol Isha problem? So we see actually, this goes into the issue of Kol Isha a little bit, that Kol Isha is not just about men listening to women's voices. Kol Isha, as a principle, is about inappropriate connections between men and women. Have a look at this example in number 22, number 23. There's a Gemara in Kiddushin about Rav Nachman and his wife Yalta. Rav Nachman had a very famous wife. She had quite a sharp tongue and she had an extremely sharp mind. And Rav Nachman and his wife, there are many stories in the Gemara about how they related to each other. So this is a story here in number 23 where Rav Nachman is a dayan and it says, Azmini Rav Yehuda ledina lekami de Rav Nachman. Rav Yehuda was called up for a din Torah in front of Rav Nachman. Not getting into why he was in a din Torah, but Rav Nachman knew Rav Yehuda very well, and he said to him at the end of the Beis Din proceedings, Amalei, so Rav Nachman said to him, Nishadi le mar shalma di liyalsa, shall I give your best wishes to my wife Yalta? So he replied, Amalei, no, hachi amashmul kol beisha erva. It's kol isha. What's kol isha? Rav Nachman is going to give Rav Yehuda's wishes, best wishes, to Yalta. There's no women singing here. Apparently he says, no, that's no good because of Kol Isha. So Rav Nachman replied, Esha Ali de Shliach. I don't want you to speak to her. I'm just going to give your regards to her. I'll be your shaliach. I'll be your messenger. Amalei, he said to him, no, Hachi Amashmul, Ein Shoilin B'Shalom Isha, you can't send any regards to a woman, even through a shaliach. So Rav Nachman says, really? Al Yidei Bala, even through a husband? What's wrong with you? Why can't I, the husband, give your best wishes to my wife? Amalei said to him, Hachi Amar Shmuel. No, Shmuel says the following, Ein Sholem B'Shalom Isha Klal. You must never ever give best wishes to a woman. It's part of Kol Isha. So you see from here, by the way, that's not necessarily the halacha today. Exactly whether you can give best wishes to somebody else's wife, it may depend on the circumstances. If someone says, please give our good wishes to your wife, there's no intimacy there. That's probably fine. I remember once that I was standing in Berman's Bakery many years ago, and a prominent Rosh Yeshiva came up to me and said to me, who knows us very well, and he said to me, give my best wishes to Sarah. And then he winked at me and said, even if it's osa to do that. And it was like an interesting conversation. What he meant was that it's not clear these days whether that's a problem to do that. But you see from here that Kol Isha is not just about singing, it's about mixing. By the way, Rav Nachman was not doing very well in this conversation with Rav Yehuda. Shalchale Debisu, his wife, Yalsa, was listening in the back. And she said, she sent a message to Rav Nachman, her husband, Sharile Tagri, why don't you let him go home now? Deloy Nashvi Kashar Amaritz, he's making a fool out of you. Yeah, he's making out that you're an Amaretz. I think it's time to stop this conversation because you're clearly not getting the better of Yehuda. But what's going on here is that Kol Isha seems to be a problem with not just singing, but some kind of mixing. Look, for example, in the Sefer Hasidim, Aval lo yitachin lebocher lelamei lebamas. A bocher, an unmarried man, shouldn't be a teacher of young women. Why not? Pen Yisgabe Yitzra, because he might start to have inappropriate thoughts, alav, you know, in him for them, or Yitzra Aleha, or they may have inappropriate thoughts for him. But called the Isha Erba, and this will be called Isha. Elaha Avil, I mean, bits of a Ishta, the father should teach the daughter, etc. Kol Isha, nobody's singing here. But you see already that Kol Isha is not just a technical issue of women singing, it's more about the how appropriate the connection is. And so too, this opinion is saying that for women to read Megillah for a man, it may not even be Kol Isha in terms of the singing. Let's say Kol Isha is not a song, this is a chant. She could say the Megillah, she doesn't even need to sing it, but there's something inappropriate about that Kol Isha connection. By the way, I can't remember whether we had a shir on Kol Isha, but there's some very interesting modern day applications of that. What happens if you have a woman singing in a situation which is clearly not in the slightest inappropriate? Is that still Kol Isha? Meaning the rabbis made Kol Isha in terms of a kind of a sexual blurring, a woman singing in a nightclub, men are listening, whatever it is, that's a Kol Isha problem. But what if you're at a tekis? What if you're at a Yom HaZikaron memorial service and a woman is asked to sing HaTikva? Is that Kol Isha? Is that what we're talking about? Is that the same? Rav Moshe Lichtenstein has a very interesting analysis of whether Kol Isha is dependent on the context, to the point that a woman singing might even be okay if the context is clearly one which is appropriate. But I'm not getting into that now. That's a whole discussion. You can read Rav Moshe's article in that way. Okay, let's summarize. So where are we? Bottom line, we have three different approaches in the Rishonim. Each of them look at these four sources in the Gemara and do something slightly different with them. Let's summarize the approaches. Approach number one is men and women are equal in Mikra Megillah, and therefore men can read for women, women can read for men. Second approach, men and women have different obligations in Megillah, therefore men can read for women, but women may not read for men because women have an obligation to hear the Megillah, but men have an obligation to read the Megillah. Third approach, men and women are basically the same, but there are other external reasons why it's inappropriate for a woman to read in public, either because it's zila behu milsa, it's cheapening somehow the woman or the mitzvah. Second reason, because it might be a problem of kavod sibur, it's not a kavod for this room of men that the only person who can read is a woman. And the third reason is because maybe it's a kol isha problem. Fine. How do we paskin lemaisa? How does the Shulchan Aruch rule? So have a look here and see if you can work out with me what is the bottom line of the Shulchan Aruch. So look at number 25. Says the Shulchan Aruch, Hakol Chayavim B'Kriyasa. Everybody is obligated to read Megillah. Anashim, the Nashim, men and women, the Geirim and converts, Avadim, Meshuchrarim and freed slaves. We also encourage the children, we teach the children to hear the Megillah, to read the Megillah, for Chinuch. That's the first opinion. Now, that sounds very like approach number one, which is that men and women are completely equal, and therefore women can read for men and men can read for women. That's the first thing he writes. Then he writes in Seif Bed, Echata Koreve Echata Shumea Mina Mikra, Yatsidei Chavaso. You can either read the Megillah or you can listen to someone else reading the Megillah. That is called Shumea Ka'one. If you have intent to fulfill your obligation by listening to them, that's as good as you reading it. For who Sheyishma Mimisha who Chayav Bikriyasa, as long as you're listening to somebody who themselves is obligated. If a non-Jew picks up a Megillah and reads it beautifully, clearly nobody is fulfilling the mitzvah with that. Lefikach, therefore, says the Shulchan Aruch, Im Haya Hakore Cheresh, if the reader was, let's say, deaf, or cotton, or a child, or shota, or someone who was mentally disturbed and didn't know what they were doing, Hashemim Emen Lo Yatsa. Fine, that makes a lot of sense. And then he brings a Yesh Omrim. The Yesh Omrim, a second opinion, Shenashim Eino Motzias Es Anashim, the women cannot read the Megillah for men. Oh, so he's brought two opinions. One opinion says, the first opinion that they can, the second opinion that they shouldn't, they can't. But we don't know why. Is it that they can't because they're on a different level? Or is it that they can't because it's inappropriate? Then comes in the Rama says, V'yesh Omrim, he brings a third opinion, Im ha'isha kora'ala atzma, if a woman wants to read for herself, mevarechet lishmoa megillah. She makes a different bracha. She doesn't say, asher kidishanu mitzvah sabat sivanu al mikra megillah, but she says, asher kidishanu mitzvah sabat sivanu lishmoa megillah. Why? She'enu chayavet bekriya, because women are not obligated for in the reading, they're only obligated in hearing the Megillah. So what comes out of that Shulchan Aruch? So there's a difference between Sfaradim and Ashkenazim. The Sfaradim, who are going to follow Rav Yosef Karo, I'm sure you know how the Shulchan Aruch works. The Shulchan Aruch is a book which is written by two different people. It's written by Rav Yosef Karo, we call them a Machaber, and he usually paskens, he brings the opinions down for Sfaradim. And it's written also, and that's why it's in the Rashi script, by Rav Moshe Isserles in Poland, and he puts in the opinions for Ashkenazim. So it sounds like the Ashkenazim are going to be straightforward enough. Why? Because he clearly rules like the view that women and men are on a different obligation. Women have to hear Megillah, men have to read Megillah. So for Ashkenazim, a woman definitely cannot read for a man. For Sfaradim, it's going to depend which view you take. Don't forget the Machaber, Yosef Karo, wrote two views. First of all, he said women can read for men, and then he said Yesh Omrim, women can't read for men. And it depends how you understand the Shulchan Aruch. According to some Sfaradi poskim, he's clearly paskening, ideally at least, like the Yesh Omrim, and I brought you the Ben Ish Chai, number 26, says as follows: I call Chayavim a Mikra Megillah, Anashim Nashim, okay? Ach, but Nashim, Afal Pisha, Yoidim Likros, even if a woman knows how to read the Megillah, Yishmu Umina Nashim, she shouldn't be reading it, she should be listening to it. Makain Minag Ba'ir HaKodesh, this is the Minag in Yerushalayim. Shema Oilam Loi Nishma Sha'isha, we never heard of a woman, Korah Megillah, who was reading the Megillah. And then he says, if a man does hear from a woman, Im Sha'ama Mehaisha, Yachsov Yikrena Beloi Brocha, the man has to read again. So there are definitely some Sfaradi poskim that rule that women definitely cannot read for men. However, you should know that Rav Avadya Yosef brings an approach here and says that B'dieved, if there's no other alternative, a woman can read for a man. So where does that leave us? If you're a Sfaradi, then maybe a woman can read for a man, maybe she can't. But if you're an Ashkenazi, there's nothing to talk about. But what could be wrong with women reading for women? And let's really get down to this issue here. And this is where I think everything starts to come together and we can look at the Hashgafa. Everything we've said so far makes it pretty clear that women can read for women. No one's even suggested that women cannot read for women. However, you'll see now that there are two sources. And we just have to see what are we going to do with these sources. And these are the sources as to why there are communities which have a problem with women reading the Megillah for other women. Women reading for men, we've talked about. Okay, there are, Ashkenazim is never going to let that happen. Sfaradim, probably not either. But have a look here in 27 and 28. These are the two sources that are going to cause us all of the complication, let's call it. Number 27. Sha'isha Moitzia Chaverta. So he says, can a woman read Megillah for another woman? And says here, this is the Korban Nasano. Rav Nathanael Weil in 18th century Germany. He says, yes, a woman can read for another woman. Aval nashim rabbis, but women reading for other women, in plural, in a shul environment, ein isha moitzian. That's not appropriate. She can't do that. Dezila bahu milsa, because that's also not appropriate. That, he brings down that idea of zila b'humilsa. It's zol. There's something wrong about this. It's inappropriate, even if a woman reads for a group of women. Etc. So according to this, and by the way, the Mishnah Brura, Paschal's like this, and the Kaf HaChaim, says that women, as you see here, an explicit source, the women are not able to read for a group of women. Now, it's interesting. Many of the Achronim actually disagree with that. And they say, no, that's actually wrong, and it could even be a mistake, because recently manuscripts of some of the Balei HaTosfos have been discovered that make it very clear that when it says zila b'humilsa, when he says something is cheap, it was only talking about a woman reading for a man. It was never talking about women reading for women. However, nevertheless, the Mishnah Brura rules that this is the halacha, that a woman should not read for even for a group of women following this psak of the Korban Asana. The Aruch HaShulchan rules differently. The Aruch HaShulchan says that women may read for a group of women. We do not paskin like this Mishnah Brura. And that raises an interesting question for us. What do we do now in the 20th century when we have a machlokas, when we have a dispute between the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan? And this is a much broader topic which can be very important. There are many poskim, Rav Moshe Feinstein, Rav Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who clearly took the view that if there is a dispute between the Mishnah Brura and the Aruch HaShulchan, then we paskin like the Aruch HaShulchan, not like the Mishnah Brura. Why? Who was the Mishnah Brura and who was the Aruch HaShulchan? The Mishnah Brura was the Chofetz Chaim, Rav Yisrael Meir HaKohen Kagan. He was a Rosh Hashiva in Rabin, but in his day he wasn't known as a posek. He wasn't known as a halacha person. He was known as a tzaddik, people, as a Rosh Hashiva. People went to him for brachas, going back to the late 1800s, early 1900s. The Aruch HaShulchan, Rav Yechiel Michal Alevi Epstein, he was a Rav. He was a Rav in Lithuania. He was known as a major posek. And therefore, when given a choice between the Aruch HaShulchan and the Mishnah Brura, there's a lot to talk about here. There are many poskim go like the Aruch HaShulchan. One of the most important works written on this, by the way, of the Aruch HaShulchan Mishnah Brura, was written by Rav Eitan Henkin, Hashem Yikom Damoy, who was killed by a terrorist with his wife some years ago now, Rav Henkin and Rebbetzin Henkin's son. But he wrote one of the most important books about the Aruch HaShulchan and deals with this issue. But that can make a difference. I'll give you another example of this psak. The Aruch HaShulchan has a well-known psak that in today's world, when many women, even in his time, did not cover their hair, even though he says that there is an obligation for married women to cover their hair, he's not debating that, but he says in a world that we live in where so many women don't cover their hair, it's no longer a problem for men to say a brocha in front of a woman with a married woman with her hair uncovered. Whereas the Mishnah Brura holds with the classic line, which is no, a man may not say a brocha in front of a woman who has her hair uncovered, and therefore there's a shaila here again. In so many areas, do we paskin like the Mishnah Brura or the Aruch HaShulchan? Here as well, this is going to be relevant because the Mishnah Brura will say that women cannot read for other women, but the Aruch HaShulchan will say that they can. So that's the first thing. Women reading the Megillah for themselves, we thought, was no problem. But now we have another problem. Number 28, look at the Magen Avraham here. The Magen Avraham says as follows. He quotes the Zohar. The Midrash Ne'elam is the Zohar on Rut. Kasav, the Loi Tikra La'atzma, a woman shouldn't even read for herself, Raktishma Ma'anashim, but she should hear it from a man. Why? Because the Zohar brings in another factor that we haven't thought about, which wasn't present in the Rishonim at all. That maybe a woman has to hear Megillah from someone with the maximal obligation in hearing and reading Megillah, i.e. from a man. So maybe a woman shouldn't even read for herself. Certainly not for other women. So based on those two sources, the Korban Asano, who understands that it's inappropriate for women to read for a group, and the Magen Avraham, who understands that it's inappropriate for women to read even for herself, there are many poskim who have ruled in the modern day world that women should not be reading Megillah for a group of women. However, there are other poskim that have said, no, we don't paskin like this Mishnah Brura, we don't paskin like this Magen Avraham, and therefore that is not a problem. We'll see in a minute. But there's a big hashkafa question which we need to get to, which probably is the most important one of all. Agav, there's a question which brocha women make. I haven't got time to get through this now, but do women actually say al mikra Megillah or lishmoa Megillah? You can read that in your own time. There's another question which Rav Benny Lau made a big splash in the last few days, who came out with a psak. The women camp for a minyan for the purpose of reading the Megillah. What does he mean by that, meaning camp for a minion for the purpose of reading Megillah? Actually, we'll see that this is not controversial at all. This has been debated and discussed for the last 700 years and more. But do you need 10 people to read the Megillah? Let's just have a look at that question now. Look at number 30. Megillah b'yud daled b'tesvav tzarech lachzor achasara. If you're reading the Megillah, you should really try and find a minion or 10 people if you can. Okay, why? Mishum pirsumi nisa, says the Berahetev, it's because you want to publicize the miracle. The in EF Shabbat, sorry, if you can't find 10 people to read the Megillah, Kurim Osam Bayach. You can read it on your own. Meaning Megillah doesn't need a minion. It's not like reading from the laning from the Torah. Laning needs a minion. Megillah does not need a minion. It just needs 10 to publicize the miracle. And adds the Ramah, the Yeshla his tapek, and therefore we now have a question. Im Nashim Mitzarfos La Sarah. Do women count for this 10? This let's call them a quorum. Let's not call them a minion. A quorum for Megillah, because it's nothing to do with a minion. It's nothing to do with needing 10 men. Do women count? The Imkaros of Mitzibur, and if someone did read, if there is a reading in public, then a person who can't make it can clearly read on their own. The question is, do women count? He's asking this question for 10, or do they not count for 10? And there are different poskim that have gone different ways on this particular issue. One of the practical applications is the bracha after the Megillah. Remember, Megillah is quite unique. We don't only read a bracha before, actually three brachas before. We say Al Mikra Megillah, we say She'achianu, we say Le'asanisim. What are the factors with the bracha afterwards? The bracha afterwards, Haravet Rivenu, says the Shulchan Aruch number 31, Hakareis Megillah Mavarch Lifnei Gimel Brachas. Somebody who's reading the Megillah makes three brachas: Al Mikra Megillah, She'asanisim, and She'achianu. He says, by day you don't make the She'achianu all over again. The Ashkenazim say you do. And here's the key. After you read the Megillah, the minag is to make another brocha, harav etrivenu. Im loy birach, loy lefenev, loy achrei, but if you didn't make these brochas, yatsa, that's fine as well. The ein levarech achrei elo b'tzibur. And here's the key point. You can only say this after brocha if you're with a tzibur. And therefore, that becomes one of the defining questions. Do women count for a tzibur? It's not a minion, for a tzibur in this area. And there, and again, Rav Benny Lau came out with the psak and said they do. That's not controversial. Many poskim have ruled that they do. I brought you in the footnotes here, Rav Avad Yosef, the Chazon Ish, the Tzitz Eliezer, because the purpose of the 10 for Megillah is not to make a minion. They're making a public quorum to publicize the miracle. Let me give you two other examples where that may also be the case. You're probably aware that women bench gomel under many circumstances. Let's say a woman gives birth to a child, or a woman is involved in, God forbid, a terrible accident, and she survives and she gets better. So there's a question: should women or should women not bench gomel? So the Shulchan Aruch brings down that women sometimes do bench gomel, women sometimes don't. The look here in number 33 says the Mishnah Berurah here, Gama nashim minag ha'olam she'ein mevarachin. Women generally don't bench gomel, he says, brocha zor. V'kasvo achronim hatam mishum desei de brocha zor hu bifnei asara. That's because they need to bring 10 people together. Okay, could la kame. The loy orech ara, it's not derech ara, it's not nice for women to suddenly bring 10 men together and make this brocha. But, as you probably well know, the custom today is that women do bench gomel. The yesha kasvid rikom machem nachamu, and other people say, no, it's fine. Shitavarash, she can bench gomel. Bifnei asara, in front of 10 men. And not only that, al kopanim, bifnei nashim ve'eshachad. Maybe she can bench gomel in front of 10 people. They don't have to even be men. Because again, benching gomel is not about a minion. You don't need a minion of men to bench gomel. You just need 10 people to publicize that she's saying, Baruch Hashem, I give thanks that I recovered, etc. And that could be 10 men, could be 10 women, it could be 5 men, 5 women. It doesn't have to be a minion. So here's another area where women make up the quorum, potentially, because you don't need a minion. A third area, which I mentioned here, is that lo yaleinu, but there is a mitzvah if a person has to die al kiddush Hashem. If, God forbid, a non-Jew says that a Jew has to break a mitzvah, so if it's one of the big three, adultery, immorality, avodah zarah, so then it's well known that a person has to die rather than transgress. But let's say it's not one of those big three. They just say you have to break Shabbos, or we'll kill you. So the psak halacha is, if it's in public, if it's going to be a Kiddush Hashem Barabim, and they want you to do it because they want to make a point against Judaism, then it puts a Rambam Paskins, the Shulchan Aruch, a person has to die rather than transgress if it's public. The question is, what does public mean? Ten who? 10 men, 10 women. And there again, I brought you in the footnotes there, many of the poskim debate, why should this need to be 10 men? Women are also obligated in the mitzvah of Kiddush Hashem, and therefore the idea of giving up one's life to sanctify God's name in public is not just in public with 10 men, but 10 women as well. So here you see different examples of where the 10 is not a minion, but it has another purpose. So where are we left? Let's just summarize, and then we'll look at the hashgofer. It didn't seem from the Rishonim that there was any problem with women reading for women. We've seen in the Achronim, the Korban Nesanel, and the Magen Avraham, that there are potentially halachic problems, women reading for women. Some people paskin that way, the Mishnah Brura, others. Some people don't paskin that way. So there is clearly a halachic debate going on as to whether women can read for a group of women. But one of the main issues here, and this is what I want to finish with the last 10 minutes, or the 6-7 minutes, is the hashgafic angle. Does this feel like the right thing to do? Meaning, leaving aside whether women can read for a group of women, we've seen already, there's different opinions and you can follow different approaches on that. But not can they, but should they? Is it the right thing to do to have a group of women where a woman is reading the Megillah? So there are many ways of analyzing this, and I'm definitely not the person that's going to decide this in any way, but I brought you 4 or 5 arguments for and against, and I think you'll find this very interesting at the end. What are the arguments for? Well, first of all, there's a strong argument that we should be encouraging women to be involved in religious expression, involved in the community, in ways which are halakhically permitted. Some women find Megillah reading by women very empowering. Some find it very enriching. Other people say that they don't feel they need it. That's fine. But why, if women want to have an expression of religious connection in a way which is halakhically permitted, why would you say no? And not only why would you say no, but there is a danger to continue saying no to everything. Because if you keep on saying no to everything, then eventually people are going to breach something that is even more significant. Have a look at this statement by Rav Aaron Soloveitchik about women saying Kaddish. Are women allowed to say Kaddish? Now, you need a minion to say Kaddish. So if there are 10 men there, where can a woman say Kaddish? So says Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, nowadays, when there are Jews fighting for equality for men and women in matters such as Aliyot, which is very problematic, if Orthodox rabbis prevent women from saying Kaddish when there is a possibility for allowing it, it will strengthen the influence of Reform and Conservative rabbis. It is therefore forbidden to prevent women from saying Kaddish. Very interesting idea. He says, if you keep saying no because you're scared of where it might lead, you say no too often, people basically turn around and say, okay, well, if you always say no, I'm out of here. And therefore, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik there is saying you have to say yes when you can say yes, and therefore maybe a woman's Megillah reading is a very healthy and wholesome religious outlet for women to read Megillah in public for other women. There's also an argument to increase women's education. Maybe this can be a project for bat mitzvahs, etc. And there's also a practical thing. Sometimes when women go to the main Megillah reading, they don't always hear what's going on in reading the Megillah. If everyone's making a noise, if the kids are going crazy, women don't always hear the Megillah properly. And the Mishnah Berurah even brings that down as potentially a problem. So there are reasons why, yes, one might want to encourage women's Megillah readings for women. What are the arguments against? Well, one of them is Purim is meant to be a festival of Jewish unity. Don't forget, that's a big theme in Purim. Haman says to Ahasuerus, the Jews are scattered, the Jews are disunited, and that's how they're vulnerable. Esther says to Mordechai, Knoiset kol ha'yudim, gather them together, make them unified. So there's a good argument for saying that, you know, women should not be making breakaway minyanim in order to bring everybody together. But that's not such a strong argument, because we often have Megillah readings for women by men when it's more convenient for the women, which is fine as well. But that's one argument. Another argument is there needs to be more publicizing the miracle, etc., which is if there are more people there. And then there's another argument, which is, generally speaking, Barov Adram, Barov Am Hadras Melech, that the more people you have in the shul, the better it is. The problem with all of these arguments is that they're applied inconsistently. we don't mind when men make breakaway minyanim and etc. And therefore, why are we going to apply these when women make such a minyan? And somebody just put on the group here, gosh, a very long question. All things are not equal, correct. It's impossible to hear, yes, you put that, I mentioned that, specified times. And then the person just put on the group here a point which I actually made in the footnotes, which is that sometimes bringing a teenage boy in to read for a group of women may itself be something of an insult for those women. If those women are able to read for themselves, to have a young boy read for them is itself potentially, Rav Henkin makes this argument, an issue of kovod hatzibur, or does that cheapen the mitzvah in some way? Let me finish with two important sources. First of all, Rav Moshe Lichtenstein on women's Megillah readings for women. He says, if a woman's Megillah laying is done, number 36, under the auspices of the shul, it forms part of the communal unity along the lines of orchestral harmony, which is achieved by different instruments contributing to the overall harmony, rather than having a single instrument create a monovocal harmony. He sees this as part of the harmony of the community. Thus, if we view it as part of a communal framework, all that is left is indeed Barov Am, and I don't think it should necessarily be the overriding factor in this case. You can't just say everybody should be together. Allowing the group to express itself Lifnei Hashem in a manner that is halachically appropriate is the right thing to do for their Avodat Hashem. These women sincerely desire to be Avodat Hashem, and they should be allowed the channels to do so. Kein benot slavcha dovrot, quotes from the Torah of not slavcha. There are so many avenues of worship that are cordoned off for sincere halachic women. It is therefore crucial to allow those that can be allowed, like Rav Aaron Soloveitchik said. I assume that circumstances such as these surely qualify for what Chazal had in mind when they spoke about la'asot nachat ruach lenashim as a halachic factor to include women to make sure that they feel enfranchised within the community. That is definitely a factor, but I want to bring you just a final source from the Shrida Eish. The Shrida Eish is not talking about Megillah readings. He's talking about bat mitzvah. And he's asking the fundamental question here. When we want to do something new, but it's not halakhically prohibited. Now, we've seen in this case that there are grounds to say that you might have a halakhic problem with this. But when there is an outlet and it's not halakhically prohibited, should we or shouldn't we? Look at what he finishes with here. And he says, he's talking about bat mitzvah. Number 37. It all depends why the people who want to make a new thing, why they want to make a new thing. What are the agendas here? This shel chakikas about mitzvah. Im heim is kavanin l'shem mitzvah. Do they really want to do it l'shem shamayim? Or chalila, or God forbid, l'shem chikui hamin, or to do it as a slippery slope towards some kind of more egalitarian agenda. And then he writes that even though there are people who have knee-jerk reactions, they hear, oh, women's having a, you know, bat mitzvah, or there's a women's Megillah reading, that's not allowed, it's going to lead to this, it's going to lead to that. He says, ulam, nevertheless, the last two lines, eilei mishkach, these people who were against such things should not forget. Ki gam hamitzdadim behetzah shel minak chadash zeh, he's talking about bat mitzvah, shel chagigas bat mitzvah, that many of the women who want to celebrate bat mitzvah, libam dofek b'charad elahachzik hachinuch hadati shel benot Yisrael, they're doing it for the right reasons. Even though there are women who might be doing things for the wrong reasons, there are other people who have very solid, positive agendas. Okay, he says that in our times we need to encourage what we can encourage in order to make women feel much more part of the community. Now, what's his bottom line? His bottom line that it depends on an agenda. Why should we be asking the women about their agenda when we never ask the men about their agendas? The answer is because this is new. Whenever there's something new, he says we need to check what the agendas of the people are, whether they're men or whether they're women. And I think in this case of Megillah reading, in my experience anyway, we're not talking about the women of the wall who have clearly very strident egalitarian agendas. It's a whole mix of conservative and reform and author. We're talking about something quite different. Someone put similarly, hakafot, absolutely the same idea, exactly the same. Women want to have hakavot on Simchas Torah, dancing with the Sefer Torah. This falls into exactly the same category. Halachically, not really a problem. Hashkafically, is it right or is it not right? Here we're looking at how to gauge that, and in many cases there are posting that will say it's to be encouraged if people are doing it for the right reasons. And as I said, my experience with women's Megillah readings is that almost in every case I've ever come across, the women are doing it for very wholesome reasons, and people feel that it really enhances their Purim and their Avodas Hashem. Bottom line, are you allowed to have a Megillah reading by women for women? Yes and no, depending on who you ask. And hashkafically, good or not good, depending on who you ask. But certainly, I would myself, personally, for what it's worth, which is not very much, encourage this where people are doing it for the right reasons, and it helps to enhance people's Purim, and it helps to help people to, you know, connect with the Megillah even more. But one has to ask one's own local Orthodox rabbi how that works, and they can make their own conclusions based on that psak. So, okay, I'm sorry in the middle about the little technical hitch. I hope that we got there in the end. I hope that everybody was able to download the sheets. Let's leave aside Megillah now. I wish everybody a Freilich and Purim. As one of my neighbors in Karnov used to always say, on Purim, he said, Chag kosher v'sameach, because you really need to keep it kosher. And on Pesach, he always said, a Freilich and Pesach, because you need to remember to keep the simcha of Pesach as well. But I hope everybody has a happy and a healthy Purim. And please God, we will reconvene next week to get onto issues which are more Pesach related.